6 months from now, you could be running a 5K, booking that dream trip, or seeing thicker, fuller hair every time you look in the mirror. Through Hers, you can get dermatologist-trusted, clinically proven prescriptions with ingredients that go beyond what over-the-counter products offer. Whether you prefer oral or topical treatments, Hers has you covered. Getting started is simple. Just fill out an intake form online, and a licensed provider will recommend a customized plan just for you. The best part? Everything is 100% online. If prescribed, your treatment ships right to your door. No pharmacy trips, no waiting rooms, and no insurance headaches. Plus, treatments start at just $35 a month. Start your initial free online visit today at forhers.com/talk. That's forhers.com/talk. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Price varies based on product and subscription plan. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
And the worms crawl in, the worms crawl out. They'll eat your guts and spit them out. And when your bones begin to rot, the worms remain, but you do not. So don't ever laugh as a hearse goes by, for someday you'll be next in line. And when death brings his cold despair, ask yourself, will anyone care?
Macabre may not be suitable for all audiences. Listener discretion is advised.
Welcome back.
Part two. W is for Wizard of Oz.
Where we left you was really bad. Sorry.
Not sorry?
I don't know. Yeah, hopefully when you heard that, if you hadn't heard of that before, were you shocked? Because holy shit.
I had no idea. I didn't even know about the stunt double at all. To be honest, I just assumed Hamilton did her own stuff.
She did, partially.
She did, until she didn't.
Exactly. Like, it's so crazy because she had to take over her own stunts because her stunt double got injured. So then she got injured. So then when she got back and recovered, her stunt double took over because she's, I'm not doing this anymore. And then her stunt double got injured again, and this time so much worse. Can you imagine? Oh my gosh.
Yeah,
We were talking about that at the end of the last one. It's like people got away with everything while filming.
Yeah. And I'm terrified to see what's coming up next.
Oh, dude.
Poor Judy.
Yeah, definitely. But also the explosions and stuff. So a side fact about those scenes they filmed. Do you know, I mentioned this before, if they would have been okay with the first 5 takes, that would have never happened. And maybe if they weren't in such a mad rush to get all of this shit done, people would have taken more care to make sure that these special effect crews were getting it okay. There was communication, so it wasn't like, hurry up and do this, okay, go, and they're not even off set yet deal. Man, and that's just like in the filming studio. There was a bunch of shit that happened outside of it, which is what gets us into Judy Garland. But it was immediately in effect because of the movie and the filming. So because of that, why don't we talk about Judy? This movie, like we had mentioned in part one, really made and broke her for the rest of her life. And the reason was she was a fresh-faced 16-year-old up-and-coming actress, and this was a big deal for her to set her in the right direction in the film career that she was looking for. While some actors and actresses that they had chosen for the movie were well-seasoned, could help and guide her, and they did, she wasn't. And for that to be her first film that she went into, I mean, there were these more seasoned actors and actresses that are like, holy crap, like, what is happening here? And then poor Judy's, okay, so this isn't normal?
Oh, yeah. How would you know, really?
And I think that because of her age, because she was new, there was a lot of advantage being taken and trying to see what her limits were. And they really pushed her to the limits. Some of the stuff we're about to get into is just, I can't even believe that fucking happened. So, like we had talked about with her makeup, she almost from the beginning was criticized for her look, her weight, the certain way that she acted, everything. She was criticized for everything that she did and how she looked. And we had mentioned they had put her on a diet. They worked very grueling hours, the main troupe of actors for this film. And so they were given pills. They were drugged every day of filming. They were given pills to stay awake for multiple hours on end. And then they were given pills at night to make them go to sleep for just the handful of hours before they would get back up and do it all over again. In some accounts of this particular aspect of the filming, several actors and actresses went on record to say that sometimes they didn't even go back to where they were staying for the night. They would go upstairs and sleep in those like clinic beds that they had when they would go get checked out because they didn't have enough time to go home. They were like dosed and then they were sent upstairs for a few hours, which is just awful.
And let's not forget that she was 16.
Yep. Yeah. So she
had in mind as yeah. we go through the rest of it, I'm sure.
Yeah, exactly.
Not that it's okay for adults or
no,
whatever. It's not okay, but you're dealing with a teenager.
Yeah. Yeah. Starting it so young. This is setting your life up right here. And those people were taking drugs back then and they're pretty strong shit, but people got addicted. There's a reason why you hear about a lot of that when it was, when we talk about old Hollywood and stuff. That's a big reason why. People got addicted to this shit. We'll go on to the next really rough thing to hear about. So this was happening, okay? And then the studio and the directors had put Judy on that diet. So she's not eating. They're basically starving her. Then they're putting on these pills. You can't not think that's not going to affect her mentally and how she acts, how she is as a So she was getting coffee and cigarettes. So it's all of these stimulants, basically, to just. So besides the health aspect of it, she was just treated poorly by the directors and the studio crew because she was on set as the immature girl that's taking the main character scene and all this stuff. So a lot of people are like, yeah, she's got to learn a thing or two. So tough love. But sometimes that tough love turned into like full on harassment and abuse. There was a moment where she was in like, she wasn't in the main scene that they were shooting, but they were trying to like work stuff out. And I don't know if they were filming yet or if they were prepping and it was right before they filmed it. But the director at the one point, the one director name we're going to give you is Victor Fleming. He would go on to be involved with Gone with the Wind as well. But Victor was getting this stuff set up. He heard Judy in the background laughing. And he got so pissed off that he went over and slapped her across the face and told her that she wasn't being professional and to grow up, basically. And Judy was in such shock that she's so... She was not alone. There were people that did take care of her on set. Margaret Hamilton, big mentor. She really stood up for Judy a lot. She knew what it was like and she knew that it wasn't easy. Ray, Bert, and Jack also stood up for her because there was a lot of stuff that happened while they were filming with the four of them that they're like, this is not okay for you to do. So good on them. There were scenes where she's crying. And yeah, Judy's a great actor. She did things on her own. But some of those scenes where she was crying or she had like really teary eyes was not her acting. She had been like verbally abused and harassed in order to evoke certain emotions. And it was basically like the harassment was just attacking her personally.
That's so awful.
Yeah. Yeah. A lot of people would say that she was really the worst. She was treated the worst out of a lot of people. Judy would, in later interviews, like she would talk about this stuff, but she would downplay some of it. And she would actually go on to say, because it would get brought up every once in a while, hey, like this happened. She would just brush off and be like, you know what? It was a great learning experience and it helped me like grow in my career. And so she took that approach to it, which, I mean, good for her. That's very big of her to do. But at the same time, it's like the shit that people got away with back then. And then look what it did after.
Yeah.
She died at the age of 47 because of a drug overdose. Like, she, it affected the rest of her life. Yeah, but good for Margaret. Good for Bert and Jack and Ray for standing up for her. Because I feel if they wouldn't have done that, it would have been so much worse. So, yeah. You had a just harassment, verbal abuse, drugging, diets. I mean, it just, ugh. That was just like the surface level of it. We don't have time to really go into things that happened outside of the filming with Judy and stuff too. And
I'll be in
the film industry. It's a really toxic history. So many scenes were put on the front line to be cut. So getting out of that portion of it now, we're done talking about accidents that happened, how people were treated, what the environment was like. Done with that now, but keep that in the back of your mind when you hear now about the battle between the directors and the studio producers for what is about to take place and would affect how we see the film today. There was so much that had been filmed in the beginning that was not okay. The studio did not like some of the stuff. And to the director's credit, I will say, it was good that they fought for some scenes that they did. Otherwise, it would have been a completely different movie. And we'll talk about a few of those scenes in the Macabre Morsels. But there were things that the bigwigs wanted that they needed because they saw the financial gain in it. And they saw it as the grabber for audiences across the U.S. So the entire time, it was just a battle between making the magic happen and bringing Baum's story to light and the money. There were several times that the studio threatened to cut funding for the entire film and to just scrap the project completely and to sell off the rights altogether. But because they felt that there would be more money in it, they were just like, we're putting so much into this and we're just losing money right now. So it was really the directors that fought for this thing. They just weren't happy with how long it took. And we have mentioned that in part one where they were whipping out films like nobody's business, but like they were talking months versus years to make a film. And so for having a film take like over a year, they're like, no. Even though there were these struggles and they really were just not seeing the value in the film anymore, they really did not realize that at this time, they were really making foundations for the history of film, and they were opening the door for so many other possibilities for future films, because this was the first fantasy film that they've ever been able to film. The Wizard of Oz premiered at the Orpheum Theater in Green Bay, Wisconsin.
That's so cool.
Isn't that cool? Hey, it's not about a killer this time.
Yeah. Non-serial killer related.
So that would film at the premiere at the Orpheum on August 10th of 1939. And then a few weeks later, it would go nationwide. The Orpheum was their test. They wanted to see what people thought so that they could adapt what they had for promotional things for the rest of the country. So it was setting them up. It was what they used to do back then. You see that a little bit now, too, with other experimental films, but more so back then. The film earned $3 million during the original release, which was definitely less than MGM was hoping for. They were wanting that big golden ticket, and they didn't get it. The legacy is what really made this film and the story and everything behind it invaluable. The reason why MGM didn't go any further to just wreck this film and be like, nope, we didn't make the money on it, whatever, was because of Gone with the Wind, the other film that Victor Fleming was a part of at the time. Gone with the Wind is still one of the best films critically ever made, and it ranked in so much money that it made up for what The Wizard of Oz did not make. It's interesting to argue, like, what really became more famous, because Wizard of Oz became really popular through TV. They ended up giving the licensing to different TV channels when TV became popular. And that's how so many people ended up seeing the film. Before, when it was just on the big screen in movie theaters, not many people were seeing it. So when it came to TV, everyone saw it.
Yeah. I imagine at that time, too, when it came out, people were still struggling financially.
Oh, definitely.
So to go to the theater, like, not everyone could afford that luxury. Yeah.
That was a very big deal. If you got to go and do that, it was so big. And then you had your little clips. It was an all-day affair. You would go before the movie to see clips of the news because they had newspapers, but that was the first makings of the news, as people would film the audio over a story and getting into World War II. That's how people found out about what was going on overseas. People would go to the movie theater for that, which, can you imagine? That would be a very interesting experience, but yeah, really crazy. Of course, that's why. And Gone with the Wind, it's just another, no, I'm not saying Gone with the Wind wasn't a great movie, but it's the same thing that they're used to filming. And Wizard of Oz was the first fantasy one. So where it would appeal more to kids, it's not necessarily appealing to everybody else in the beginning, but that would soon change. It was a favorite by everyone, you know, of all ages, once people did get to see it. And they made the film that way, of course, but yeah. Yeah. If only the bigwigs at MGM were alive to see what would become of this, I think they would have thought very differently back then. So let's talk about the impact of the film. Speaking of that, anyway. What would society and pop culture look like right now as a whole if we didn't have that film? It's insane. It's in everything, it feels like, in some way or form. The impact it's made through the generations has influenced so many people around the world. It's influenced generations. It's influenced all kinds of pop culture. It's just a piece of classic golden cinema history. Many adaptions, of course, have been made since. You've got The Wiz that came out in 1978, starring Diana Ross as Dorothy, and then you have Michael Jackson as the Scarecrow. Yeah. Have you seen it?
I don't think so. No.
It's good. It's good. They had switched it for the movie, so they're not in Kansas. They're actually in New York City for that movie. But when I was in college, I got to go to the Motown Museum in Detroit. And they had some of the memorabilia from The Wiz in there. It was pretty cool.
That's cool.
Yeah. In 2013, you had the Oz and the Great and Terrible. It had like James Franco and stuff in it. I have not seen that one, but it did pretty well. It was pretty popular. I do remember that.
What's the creepy one that's like from the 80s?
Oh my gosh, yeah. Oh my gosh. I should have put that in here. Is it
Oz or something? What is it called?
I think it's just Oz. Let us know.
That one, I remember Firouzja Balk was in it, and she was a kid.
Oh, yes. Oh my gosh. It's been a long time since I've seen that. It was like a... I don't even know how to describe it, but you're right.
Return to Oz.
Return to Oz. That's what it was.
1985, dark fantasy film.
Yes. Yeah.
That one was like, creepy.
It was creepy, like fever dream creepy.
Yeah. Yeah.
Ooh, now I want to find that.
I hadn't seen that until only a few years ago.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I didn't see it as a kid. I saw it as an adult, and yeah. I might have been on edibles at the time, so it was even wilder.
It's funny you bring that up. We're going to get to something later.
If you watch The Wizard of Oz and you are high on the green stuff, it is a totally different film and it is fucking incredible.
Yes. So many people have said that. I saved this little nugget for Macabre Morsels, but we'll get into that too about a different take, yeah. Let's say. Yeah. I'm sure you've heard of it. And I want to hear if you have what happened, but not to throw anybody under the bus to this house either. But we'll get into that in a second. I saw Return of Oz. Oh, my gosh. And obviously not when it originally came out. And I was not young when I saw it. I think I was in high school. It was on like, do you remember? Was it IFC or someone went, like the independent film channels or whatever? Yeah. And it was on there. And I couldn't sleep one night and that was on. And let me tell you, I totally did not fall asleep after that either. I was just up the rest of the night. That was like, oh, shit.
Yeah.
But then, so you had that one. So you had one in the 70s. You had one in the 80s. You had, when we'll talk about a big one right now, but then you had one in the teens. And then you had the show that was like a modern day version of Oz.
Yeah.
I remember watching that too. But it was a TV show. Who was in
that? Was that?
Gosh, I don't remember.
It was. Oh, my gosh. I get the two actresses mixed up because they look similar. It wasn't Elijah Dushku, was it? Was it her?
I don't think it was her. Oh, but what's the other actress's name? I know who you're talking about who looks similar.
Yeah, with the big blue eyes.
Yes. I think it was her.
But I could anyways.
But yeah.
I did watch that, I think, out of curiosity. I don't remember a lot about it, but.
I think I just watched the first season and then I didn't get to see the other ones, but it looked like it was going to be really good. It was modern and I liked it. I should find it. And of course, the big one now, we have to backtrack a little bit in that timeline to 1995. Author Gregory Maguire wrote the novel Wicked, The Life and Times of the Wicked Witch of the West, which became a huge success. Huge.
Yeah.
There was a whole series made. And the whole series is so freaking awesome. I highly recommend it. If you've read Wicked, if you haven't read the other ones in the series, please do. It's so good. If you've never read them at all, go and do it. That should be the next series you read. Really good. Really detailed. And if this sounds familiar and you're not familiar with the books, you might be very familiar with what came out of Maguire's books. The very famous musical Wicked blew up on Broadway. And it has been a hit for years. And of course, last year, the film came out starring Ariana Grande and then Cynthia Erivo. I haven't seen it yet. Have you?
No.
It's on my bucket list to watch. The books were great. So I can't wait to see. And then, oh yeah, Jeff Goldblum is in it too. So, you know.
There's that.
There's that. But yeah,
also, Hear Me Out.
Hear me out, Jeff Goldblum laying on the table in Jurassic Park.
Yes. I think the thing is I like nerdy guys. I think that's a thing for me.
It's just same. I know. And I think about Doctor Who and I'm like, yeah, David Tennant, Matt Smith. Yep. Bow tie check, and check. A tweed jacket. Check, check. Converse and a trench coat. Check, check. Only on David Tennant, but check.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a massive hit now. The legacy just keeps going. And not to mention, all of the music in the original film is so memorable and timeless. That shit is still banging today. And it remains one of the most influential films of all time. This year, the movie turns 86. Isn't that wild? 86 years old. And even now, like some of the special effects still hold up in their way.
Yeah, it's they do.
Yeah.
It didn't age out. I feel like it's held up really well. They
it
did
really
great
has.
For the time
of
what they had to their ability to pull off those scenes.
Yeah. It's incredible.
Yeah.
Unparalleled. And I think a lot of us just don't put two and two together for the time frame. This was World War II, people. Like, this was awesome. Movies were still being shown. But you had a lot of takeover of the news. You had propagandists. You had a bunch of documentaries coming out about all of that stuff. And it really just, the world turned on its head. So when it did come to the TV, it was like a rebirthing of the entire thing. People were hooked. In fact, it's partially the reason why colored film and fantasy films succeeded as a mainstream genre for film. We wouldn't have that today. And they really sold the idea of colored film because we'll talk about that too in Macabre Morsels. I think we're going to find it pretty funny what people thought about that kind of stuff back then. Very interesting when you think about what we deal with today. But it was so expensive. for the time. It came in at a whopping $2,777 million. I said that right?
$277 million.
For the time. That's a lot for the 30s. Yeah. Coming out of the Great Depression shit.
So wait. The first run, you said they made $3
million. Yep. The movie made $3 million. They were expecting to make millions off of this movie.
Lots of millions.
Yeah. So they just equaled themselves out, which they were not happy with because they had put so much time and effort into it. The prospect, MGM thought, oh my gosh, people have been wanting this for years on a film. It's never succeeded, but we can do it. They were like, we got this. We're just going to do it. The rights had been passed off so many times. Finally, they got their hands on it. So they're like, this is the golden child. And then initially, it didn't do the best. But
6 months from now, you could be running a 5K, booking that dream trip, or seeing thicker, fuller hair every time you look in the mirror. Through Hers, you can get dermatologist-trusted, clinically proven prescriptions with ingredients that go beyond what over-the-counter products offer. Whether you prefer oral or topical treatments, Hers has you covered. Getting started is simple. Just fill out an intake form online, and a licensed provider will recommend a customized plan just for you. The best part? Everything is 100% online. If prescribed, your treatment ships right to your door. No pharmacy trips, no waiting rooms, and no insurance headaches. Plus, treatments start at just $35 a month. Start your initial free online visit today at forhers.com/talk. That's forhers.com/talk. Tontandia products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Price varies both on product and subscription plan. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
The fact that came out alongside of Gone with the Wind, I feel
I have not seen.
I haven't either.
Okay. I was going to say,
don't feel bad.
At one point, I was like, should I say this?
Yeah,
I'm not.
Yeah. No, no judgment. I've never seen it either. I would like to sit down and watch it someday, but it's a commitment. That is a long movie. But apparently the book is also very good. I haven't read the book either. But I would like to. So, sorry, listeners, if you're like, what the fuck?
I don't think it'll ever measure up to Wizard of Oz, in my opinion, though. It's a very different type of movie story.
Agreed. To me, I know I've never seen it.
Yeah, sure.
But, yeah.
Which to me, also doesn't hold up for the time either.
No, 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 no.
Now it's cringe.
Yep. I know. So I'm like, oh, I'm going to go sit down and watch it. You're like, oh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wizard of Oz still holds up.
Yes, it really does. To me, it's the bigger movie. It's withstood the test of time. And I feel like it will for quite some time. It means a lot to a lot of different people for a lot of different reasons. And it's just magical. Who doesn't get emotional when they hear Somewhere Over the Rainbow? I know I do. Every time. Man, Judy Garland's voice in general. Oh my gosh. So, just going to be vulnerable here for a second. Have Yourself a Merry Little Christmas by Judy Garland. You want to get me to cry immediately? Play that song. Guess what? I don't listen to that. If we're like out in like a restaurant during that time or like out at a shop and it comes on, I start talking very loudly. I can't hear it because I just am like, are you crying in the blouses?
No.
One of those. But okay. You want to hear some really good macabre morsels, though?
Yes.
It's just gold.
I'm ready. Okay. Let's do this.
Okay. I was shocked at a lot of the shit. Okay. Let's start with Lehman again. Lehman Frank Baum. He wrote a lot of books for that series, but he wrote about 60 books in his lifetime.
Damn.
That's a lot. And they were primarily for children. So I thought I'd share that.
And I think the books are much darker. It's a much darker story. Isn't the story of the Tin Man, like, really fucking dark?
Mm-hmm.
Like, his stuff being hacked off and, like, his heart. So
he was
I didn't read them. So it was, like, violent and gruesome. And I'm like, damn, I can't imagine reading that book as a kid.
Right? And all these kids are like, yeah. So it goes to show for the time.
They were used to pretty rough lives.
Yeah.
That probably wasn't as dark to them. They're like, yeah, that's a Saturday afternoon.
Exactly. Oh, his hand got chopped off? Send him out the bills.
No big deal. No big deal. Yeah. He was working on the farm and there goes his hand.
Yeah. Happens to all of us.
Yeah.
I know. Is that crazy?
But yes, I haven't read all of them, but oh, are they dark?
They're dark.
And the witch too, right? She was the Wicked Witch was much darker.
Yes, yes. That's a series that I want to pick up. I've heard from other people that have read it, there's some stuff in the series that doesn't age very well. But yeah, look at the time too. A lot of stuff just doesn't. But I feel like they didn't do a lot of that kind of stuff in the movie as much. So that's good. But some of that shit, I guess, is so dark.
Yeah.
So I want to read them now and be like,
kind of do too.
Yeah.
To get my hands on some originals.
Oh my gosh. I'm kicking myself in the pants. I found an original copy of the second book in a vintage antique shop one time. And I'm sure it was like super expensive. And that's probably why I didn't really look more into it, but it'd be cool. Some of the artwork's really cool. But yeah, more interesting stuff about that too. So the characters, which is, it's cool because I think this set up other people in literature and characters as well, but Dorothy's character is considered to be by some the very first heroine in children's literature, which is really cool to think about. In fact, much of the world of Oz is a matriarch. So that wasn't heard of either, really. Towards the end of the series, it's actually revealed to the reader that the true ruler of Oz is a girl. So that's pretty cool. The timeless song, Somewhere Over the Rainbow, bringing it back, almost didn't happen. The studio wanted to cut it.
Oh my gosh.
And some of the directors, the revolving door of directors that came in, a few of them didn't like it either because they thought that the sequence, how it was filmed, was stupid. Because they're like, oh, you're just following her around as she's singing? She's not even doing anything. Like, this is dumb. I'm like, no. Like, I'm so glad that the directors fought for it. Yeah, it would.
Yeah, I can't imagine.
No, it would never have been what it is today. When the kind of like the side bit of it is the studio head honchos had reviewed it and they're like, what is this? This wasn't worth the amount of money that went into one filming it. It wasn't worth the time of the crew, like all that stuff, which are very cruel about it. But yeah, the filmmakers fought for that. And at one point they did get an official rejection. And then one person was like, I think I forgot to clip that out, so I guess it's just stuck in there. And so then the studio's, okay, that's fine. So many people on set during that song got emotional. Like, people got chills. A lot of people will say, like, during the filming of that and hearing Judy sing it, they were like, I don't know how anybody could have possibly wanted to put that on the chopping block. So in the film, Dorothy's slippers are ruby red. But in Baum's book, they were a silvery chrome, which is interesting. The film had three directors and two others that gave advice on some of the scenes, and then there's some unofficial ones too. So there's just a very big group of revolving door, like I said. That's why we didn't really name anybody. Who's who? Judy Garland, like we had mentioned in part one, was not the first pick for Dorothy. Do you know who was? Shirley Temple.
Interesting.
Right? Now, she was still very much a child at that time, so she would have fit that bill better than Judy did. But Shirley, of course, had a signature way about her and how she was portrayed in films. The singing potential that they wanted for Dorothy's character, Shirley did not make that cut for them. And they did eventually decide that the voice was more important than the appearance. So they did end up going with Judy. The other thing that people said was Shirley ended up turning it down because there was another film that was coming up that she wanted to be involved in. So I think it played hand in hand, but a lot of people favored Judy in that case. The film was 100% indoors. All of that was created. which brings us to some of the myths and legends about the filming of this movie. You're probably like, how come you didn't mention that hanging guy in the background? Because that seems to be what everybody wants to know. Just wait. I got there. Eventually. Let's talk about a couple of them. Yeah. All right. Let's talk about the hanging man first because, all right, calm your pants. No. The actor that people are claiming hung himself is not real. But we're going to break it down and why people think and they can say and claim that they can pause it to see it in the movie.
I know what it is in the movie.
Yes.
You can see them running around. And
exactly. So for people still thinking, because I did for a very long time and my grandma swore on it, that but it's not a thing. Sorry, grandma, but it's not. No. Nobody in Munchkinland was hanging in the background because there was an unrequited love of sorts. Okay, that was the background story. It wasn't a thing at all. In that scene where you can allegedly see a swinging figure in the background is actually a rogue bird.
It's a bird.
Yes, and you want to know why? Because it was all filmed indoors. They were trying to create the illusion of being outside, so they rented some birds from the local zoo. And some of them went rogue.
It's actually really funny.
It is funny because that was one of the ones they couldn't freaking catch. And so he's like up there. He's smart. Smart birds. So the thing you can see swinging around is it's a bird.
It's a bird wing. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's doing that.
Yeah.
Like it does this.
It's like stretching its wing out and coming back in. Yeah.
Yep.
Now that I know that, I laughed out loud so hard. I was like, it's a fucking bird. Because I went and watched the movie when I was doing the writing for this thing. Like, oh, when is it? And sometimes it's, I can see it. And then other times it's, oh my gosh, I know exactly what happened there. And I am like cringing. Yeah. So I highly recommend going back to do a rewatch now. No. The actors and actresses that played the Munchkins did not have wild parties while filming this movie.
Bummer.
Yep. Yes. Everything that was negatively stated was either overly exaggerated or completely made up. It was a big deal. People made a big deal about this. They were all hired on from the same vaudeville troupe, and they were very professional by all accounts. It was later.
Oh, good.
But people didn't really take them seriously either. So if something went wrong, they're like, oh, they're at it again. That kind of thing. There was actually a movie that was made based on this rumor that came out in 1981 called Under the Rainbow, starring Carrie Fisher and Chevy Chase.
Are you serious?
Yeah, it's a thing. I think you can find it on Prime. There's a couple of streaming services you can find it on, but this movie was based on that and the motel that they stayed at. Them staying in that motel is true. They were all put up in that motel for the filming process. And so like they got to know each other and all that stuff. They already were very close knit because they came from the same troupe. But yeah. The whole thing is based on a rumor. So no wild parties. They didn't get weird. It's not really a thing. A couple people were just not happy with how things went down. We won't go into that, but yeah. And coming back to what we were talking about earlier, no, Pink Floyd did not sync up their album Dark Side of the Moon to the movie. It was not possible then. They did not have a VCR to play the movie to try to sync that up. That's a rumor. They get asked about it and they get mad about it because people won't stop asking them. That was intentional.
Just a coincidence, a strange coincidence.
Yes. Yes. I did not hear about this thing until I was in college, but they call it Dark Side of Oz. So what it is, you sync that album up to the movie. So where you're supposed to start it. Somebody told me this is where you start it. I have not done it. So I was going to ask you if you've ever.
No.
I want to interview.
I have not.
Yeah. I want to interview who did tell me about it because they said it's a whole new experience. It completely changes the entire thing. So I've never done it. But Allegedly. If you want to try it out, you go for it. But you start the album, Dark Side of the Moon, when the MGM lion starts roaring. And then watch how the album will oddly sync to the movie. And when it ends during the movie.
Interesting.
Yep. And then did you know that that color was actually introduced to motion pictures as early as 1924 with two-tone Technicolor? That's earlier than I thought. So it was first seen in a silent film called The Uninvited Guest, the two-tone Technicolor. And it was about a man that showed up. Get it? Okay. Let me rewind that. It was first seen in the silent film called The Uninvited Guest. The two-tone color one. I almost said the tricolor, but that would be later. So it's a two-tone. It was about a man that showed up to this estate and they only fed him cold meat for dinner.
Oh,
and
no.
Then acted as if he wasn't there.
So it was a medieval.
What's a medieval goodbye? Sorry. No, I actually don't know what the summary is. I just threw that in there because idioms.
Yeah.
That was like, this is a perfect opportunity to fuck with some people.
It worked on me. I was like, seriously?
No way. Nope. Throwback to Eyes for Idioms Part 2, where we talk about the cold shoulder.
The cold shoulder.
The tricolor, the three-color Technicolor, came to be on the scene all the way, like 10 years after that in 1934. So it took a little bit of time for that to happen. Producers everywhere during this time were very hesitant about the risk with putting that in their films. And it was because of how the advancements were at the time. And a lot of moviegoers actually commented saying that it gave them headaches when they saw color in film.
Interesting.
Yeah. What's also funny is that moviegoers also said that when talkies became a thing. So it's funny because it's like, you go from silent films to talking films and people are like, oh, the noise, the talking is giving me a headache. And then you go from that to color. Oh, I can't handle the color. Oh, it's giving me a headache. But you think about our lives now and you're like, really?
Probably happened with 3D. People probably complained about 3D.
Yep. People are getting vertigo from 3D.
Virtual reality, that's a thing that does really fuck with people.
Yes. Oh my gosh. Yes. Yeah. The first time I ever did that, I can't remember the name of the game now, but it was like a motion game. And you had to run around this track thing and things were trying to attack you from all over the place. I got such bad vertigo that when I took it off, I had to put my head between my knees. I was like, I can't do this.
Yeah.
It was really bad. 100 years from now, somebody's like, babies, they're probably living in it and, you know, the times. But yeah, it wasn't until 1938 that Technicolor films were a hot commodity. And that is because of Wizard of Oz. They saw people using it on that set and they asked how they were going to be implementing it because they saw the technique that they were using with black and white to color and then back to black and white. And a big reason for that was also not just to enhance the magic of the world of Oz, but also for budgeting purposes and the effect that they wanted to create. When other people filming were hearing about this, they're like, interesting, but we'll see how it goes for you, that kind of thing. But then after that, it was a major selling point.
So, funny story about the whole the black and white to color.
Yeah.
I remember my stepdad telling me that when he was a kid, the first time he saw the film, he did not know that it was in color because they only had a black and white television.
Oh, no.
So that big reveal, he did not know that was a thing until much later on in his life when he had access to a color television. He just thought the whole film was in black and white. And I'm like, that's so sad to me to think about that experience. It would be so different to see that film only in black and white.
It makes you wonder, too, how long did it take for people to really understand that?
because it, when it hit big in the TV world,
most of them were black and white TVs.
Yeah. I didn't even think about that.
Yeah. So they wouldn't even have had the full experience of it until people had color televisions, which would have been, generally speaking, probably quite a bit later.
Yeah. I was going to ask that, actually. Wasn't the first color television in the 50s?
Good question. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
I will look. It's going to bug me.
Yeah, and he would have been born in a poorer area, and his family didn't have a lot of money, so they had a black and white TV.
And you think about that, too. People would inherit from other people in the family sometimes, and you would get... I know we had that in our family, too, where it was like, some people didn't have a modern thing for how long, because it's all just gets passed down, because that shit was stable back then.
Yeah. So it makes me wonder, when would have people at home watching it been able to experience that, really, as the transition from black and white to color?
I agree. So interesting. I did not know this way earlier than what I thought. The first color demonstration for TV, for like tubular color installed into TVs, was August of 1944.
Okay. So we're still talking in World War II.
Yeah, which is very weird. You have to, like you said, for the common middle class family, you have to expect that's not happening until probably the late 50s or early 60s then, especially with how much that stuff costs. And you're coming
you
out of the
TV. TV.
Yep. People come over to your house if you had a
to
TV.
To watch it.
Yeah. Watch the news and everything. Yeah, it was a big deal to have that. And so many people, similar today with phones, a lot of people didn't want a TV. They saw it as disruptive or not worth their time for quite some time. And then you hit a slump with World War II. I mean, with war, budgets change and everything. So that obviously disrupted how far this could have even gone prior to that. Weird. It's so weird to think about.
Yeah.
Wild. Woof. Listeners, thank you again for coming to hang out with us for part two. Yeah, we want to know. Let us know. What did it for you for Wizard of Oz? Who's your Hear Me Out? When did you first see it? What were your thoughts? Does Judy Garland singing make you cry? All those things. Let us know. Yeah. Thank you for coming to hang out with us today. Really appreciate it. We freaking love you so much. We are really close to the end of season two. So, fuck, things are happening. Things are coming. And we'll see what happens. Until then, as always, have fun, be safe, be kind, and we will shock you later.
Bye.
Bye.
Now I gotta rewatch that movie.
Six months from now, you could be running a 5K, booking that dream trip, or seeing thicker, fuller hair every time you look in the mirror. Through Hers, you can get dermatologist-trusted, clinically proven prescriptions with ingredients that go beyond what over-the-counter products offer. Whether you prefer oral or topical treatments, Hers has you covered. Getting started is simple. Just fill out an intake form online, and a licensed provider will recommend a customized plan just for you. The best part? Everything is 100% online. If prescribed, your treatment ships right to your door. No pharmacy trips, no waiting rooms, and no insurance headaches. Plus, treatments start at just $35 a month. Start your initial free online visit today at forhers.com/talk. That's forhers.com/talk. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Price varies based on product and subscription plan. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.